at the Hive Podcast, part of the SB Nation Network of Podcasts. This is your Summer League recap show with, I'm Jonathan, the host, and I'm joined by Jack and Chase. Jack, how are you?
Good, how are you guys doing? Excited to be here.
Good. Chase, how about yourself?
I'm doing pretty well. I'm excited to wrap up Summer League, the last bit of Hornets basketball that we have for, I think, like almost 3 months now. So we've got a while.
Isn't it kind of strange that, like, how quickly the Summer League starts after the draft and stuff, and then there's with such a long break before camp and everything starts?
Yeah, you'd think it would be in, like, August or, like, the first week of August or something, just so there's not, like, a month with nothing going on in the NBA calendar pretty much.
Yeah, I think the NBA, would benefit from that to have, like, I don't know. I know that they say the Summer League gets a lot of deals done because they're all, you know, in the same place and talking to each other face to face. But then they had the Rockets general manager on during one game that I was watching, and he's like, yeah, I don't really know. I don't really do anything differently here than I do any time else during the year. So I think from a, you know, league interest standpoint, it would definitely make more sense to be in August. Plus it, like, I don't know, gets closer to the count. Like, I don't know. It makes more sense, like, in the calendar. Like, you see who's good enough to make your team, and then you have camp, like, in a couple weeks, as opposed to, like,
yeah,
we see who, like, ooh, maybe we this guy deserves a shot. See you in a month and a half for training camp when all sorts of things can change. Plus, like,
yeah, and you've made all your moves by August, too, like, signed all your free agents and all that type of stuff.
Right, so you know, like, what you're looking for and stuff still. Yeah. Plus, like, some of the times with the trades, like, with the draft pick trades and stuff, like, players can't even play or for some of their team for parts of Summer League.
Yeah, I think Jalen Duren missed the first game because he hadn't signed his contract with the Pistons yet, or at least came close to miss, or didn't practice with them all up until the first game or something.
Yeah,
like that.
They can't practice. Like, they won't practice. Like, the Summer League starts, like, the day after the moratorium ends. So, like, if a player is part of a draft day trade, they can't practice until the day before Summer League starts. And it's like, depending on the team, they're like, let's give you a minute to figure out what's going on before we start throwing you in a game action. But before we get into, like, individual players or anything like that, what was your guys' general takeaway from the Summer League as a whole, for the Hornets at least?
I thought it was good. I mean, specifically Hornets, I know I wrote about it on one of, like, the notebooks I wrote for At the Hive. I thought the roster construction, and I know that's, like, stupid to talk about for a Summer League team, but it was so, like, terrible. It was, like, I don't understand the thought process going into it. Like, you have some ball handlers in, like, Crutcher and Tyshawn Alexander, but, like, they didn't get, like, they weren't good enough to warrant significant playing time. And so then when you wanted to, like, run out lineups of guys that could actually have a chance at making the team, it's McGowan's, Figueroa, and then three centers. Like, it just made no sense the way they laid out the roster. There was, like, no wings on the roster outside of McGowan's and LiAngelo Ball, who is something. And it's just it just feels like they didn't plan it very well. And it was just a bunch of, okay, here's a bunch of big men who we want to give a ton of minutes to, so we're just going to run them all together, and JT Thor's a small forward now, which is just awful. It should just not, shouldn't be a thing.
I feel like that's been the case for several years now, where the Hornets, it's kind of the byproduct of the Hornets have been trying to get young talent at the center position, is that they just keep stocking up on bigs, and then when we get to these situations of, like, time to put the young guys out there, it's just nothing but bigs. So then, like, you end up with this thing of, like, well, if we want to get them on the floor, we have to put them out of position. And then if we want to keep them in position, we have a lot of players. We have a lot of mouths to feed. Because we've got, like, Nick Richards, since he played a couple games, Mark Williams, and Kai Jones that all should be playing minutes at the five. And then you have JT Thor, who's a four. And I feel like I would rather have JT Thor at this point at least playing five than three.
Yes.
So, like,
definitely, yeah.
So you have, like, four players who should be getting some minutes at the five, and you have four 200 minutes to do it.
Yep.
So, like, you know, it's a tough spot to be in. But yeah, I hate the lineups with LiAngelo Ball JT Thor at the three and Kai Jones at the four. It's like, that's just never going to work in any level of basketball.
Awful. Just so bad.
And it's the second year in a row that they've, like, kind of had that type of situation. Like you remember when Vernon Carey used to have to play the four all the time, like either in garbage time or in summer league or in preseason or something. It's like, like you're not really helping these guys at a certain point. Like they're getting minutes, but not in any sort of situation that's like replicable with like on the Hornets. And the other thing is like they had one point guard in Jalen Crutcher. And I mean, he was really good with the swarm last year. Like I was somewhat looking forward to watching him. On the team this summer, but he was really inefficient, like 32% from the field, 23.5% from three. And he had five assists to three turnovers, but like, that's not really the type of playmaking that you would want. And it definitely doesn't even come close to replicating the playmaking that the Hornets are going to have with LaMelo on the floor. Not that you can do that in summer league either, but I don't know. You would just think that there'd be more than one guy who is like even a semblance of a point guard.
Why didn't the Hornets find a 6'7" triple-double threat to play summer league point guard? But I was also, I guess we'll start with Jalen Crutcher. I was also excited to see what he had because I didn't watch a ton of the Swarm or hardly any of the Swarm, but like statistically he was really good and I would keep up with the scores and he flashed a lot like box score wise and he had like a crazy high 3-point percentage and he averaged like 6 assists a game. So I was like, okay, cool. Like the Hornets do need a third point guard and it, you know, it'd be nice to have like a prospect there. And then I was very disappointed with how like out of his league he looked. Like it wasn't just like, it was like he was playing well and the shots weren't falling. It just kind of seemed like he wasn't able to handle the moment, I guess, which might not be fair to say, but that was just kind of the impression that I got watching the games on TV.
It was like, as soon as he had the chance to be the ball handler, it was very clear that Bryce McGowan was a better ball handler, and then he just immediately took over as like the primary pseudo point guard on the floor at all times. And Tyshawn Alexander was all right too, if you want to say they had two point guards. But like even him, I kind of lumped him and Crutcher together in the sense that they don't really look like they're going to be NBA players. And that sounds harsh, but like just from the way that they played and like the way that they struggled in the areas they struggled in, I just can't see them making at least the Hornets roster at this point, even with the need for a third point guard. I'm more intrigued with allowing Bryce McGowan to handle some of those ball handling duties on the bench for Charlotte than like bringing up Alexander or Crutcher from the Swarm at this point.
I think, well, did you have anything on those guys, Alexander or Crutcher, Chase?
Crutcher, like, I mean, I was just like, I agree with you guys that I was like a little bit let down given how competent he was for Greensboro last year. I thought Tyshawn Alexander was pretty decent coming out of the draft, but I mean, basically since his last game at Creighton, like he has been on like a pretty consistent like downturn as a like a prospect or future NBA player. Like he was a really good defender in college, but like I didn't really get the sense of that when he was on the court for like the majority of the time in summer league. He had that one good game, the Lakers, I think. When he hit that the buzzer beater to send it to overtime. But other than that, like, I mean, he also shot really poorly. So like none of the initiator type guards that the Hornets had shot well at all, like apart from Bryce McGowan's from three, which, you know, that doesn't help the bigs in terms of like spacing and all that, much less like being able to just get them the ball when they do have open space diving to the rim. So yeah, that was probably the low weakest point of the roster, I think, was just general point guard play.
I was impressed and surprised by McGowan's though at that spot, because I know he was like the main guy at Nebraska, and we kind of saw this. I mean, it was very the parallel so far with him and Booknight in terms of like their prospect and their kind of skill sets have been pretty striking, because it was like, they're in college, they're the guy, and they have like no help around them, and they just put up shots, and they don't put up great shots, and it's like, this guy's just a bucket getter. And then they get put in this environment where they have a little bit more of a supporting cast around them, and McGowan's like, not that he's a point guard, but it's like, oh, there's definitely more here than he showed in college as a playmaker if the players around him are good. And he showed that like right away too. It didn't even take him time to ease into it. Just game one, it's like, oh, this guy's out here, like, he's seeing the floor.
Yeah, I mean, Chase, I'll let you take the reins here because you called this from the jump. You were on the McGowan's train from the start, so I'll let you have your moment, so yeah, to speak.
I was going to say, I mean, I sure am glad that I said all that stuff about him and, like, wrote that piece about him before Summer League started. And, like, I didn't really see that type of, like, not necessarily growth, but just flashing that type of stuff that he didn't really get to show in college. But that's kind of what I said, like, when I wrote that thing. And when the last time that we had the Bryce McGowan's conversation was, his team stunk in college. Like, this is a problem for good players, for average level prospects, whatever. Like, Anthony Edwards' team was awful in college too. And people were like, oh, he's a terrible playmaker, he's an inefficient shooter. But it's like, no, not really. He was just the only shooter. He was the only playmaker. So that makes it a lot more difficult. Like, when McGowan's was in college, his turnover percentage, I'm looking at it right now, it's pretty good. 13.4 turnover percentage is good, according to Bart Torvik. It has the little green thing on the stat column. But his assist percentage was terrible, but it was low, like 8.6, way lower than his turnover percentage because his team stunk. Like, they didn't have any spacers. They didn't really have any bigs that were that good. Like, it was all kind of him. And now we see what happens. Like, he has a couple of bigs that are lob threats, like JT Thor. Again, this was kind of the theme, but he didn't really shoot well from three. Actually, he finished at 37%. That's better than I would have guessed. But they just have so many, like, willing spacers and, like, guys that cut to the rim on this Hornets summer league team, much less the actual team, compared to his team at Nebraska. So, I mean, I wish I could say I was surprised that this happened. I guess I am a little bit that he showed such good passing at certain times, but I mean, hit the jump shots. I mean, that was the type of stuff that I expected to see from him pretty quickly. Like, he's so athletic and such a smooth athlete with the ball in his hands, and has such a good, like, dribble to shot transition that there's no way he wasn't going to figure out, like, off the dribble three level scoring at some point. And it seems to be coming a little quicker than we might have thought. 43% from three in summer league for a guy that was like a 27.4% shooter at Nebraska. So
the one concern being that his 2-point percentage was in, like, the
20s. Yeah, I was gonna say
that was the problem. I think the size, like, him being really skinny, showed a lot. Like, when he would drive to the rim at Nebraska, a lot of the times that he would try to finish, like, through somebody or around somebody or whatever, it would work. But now that player that he is trying to finish through is much bigger, longer, better at defense. And that's only going to be the case to even stronger degree when he plays in the NBA or the G League. So that will definitely be something he has to work on. But he can get to those spots really easily. And he seems to have a much more efficient jumper when there's, like, more space and he has better teammates and doesn't have to be, like, the guy at the top of the scouting report for the entire game.
Yeah, I think one of these things, like, to the Anthony Edwards and Bryce McGowan's point, is, like, they're a 19-year-old kid that is the only offensive option playing against basically a mostly older teams and players than them. So, like, of course there's going to be inefficiencies, and of course things aren't going to, like, when they have that much attention on them, they're not going to be the best decision makers are doing things the right way, right? Like, if you take a NBA player that gets to that level and they're, like, carrying the team, they have that experience and that better ability to pick their spots. You put that responsibility on a kid, they're going to get a little wild with it.
Exactly. Like to this point, like, up until he got to summer league, the best player that Bryce McGowan's had ever played basketball with was Bryce McGowan's. Like,
right.
There's nobody that he has ever played with that's as good as him, basically, up until now. Like,
yeah.
So that's going to take a little bit of time to get used to. And that's not like a knock to him or even to his teammates. Like, he made the NBA. It's not like the guys he played with were always bad. But, I mean, that's just how it goes sometimes when you don't go to, like, Duke or Kansas or North Carolina or somewhere that has contends for, like, the conference title every single year.
The other rookie, Mark Williams, took a little bit longer to find his stride. And I think, I mean, some of that was him. He definitely looked like he had nerves, I thought, early on, because he was, like, his hands were shaky. He lost the ball a lot. He kind of got pushed around a little bit. And then he started to find his groove a little bit. And I think the other thing is that Summer League is a terrible, and they said it a lot in a lot of the broadcasts too. Summer League is a terrible place for bigs to get good run and get good developmental. I mean, I guess it's good for their development, but to get good put in good situations to succeed. Because, like we just talked about with the Hornets, the ball handling is pretty poor, and the organization is pretty poor, and everyone out there is out there for mostly a self-serving purpose, and that everyone is trying to prove that they belong. And if you're not, the ball is not in your hands, and it's in the hands of other people that are trying to prove that they're NBA players, it's going to be hard for you to get the ball and, like, ask to do your thing.
Yeah, and it's great because the Hornets have like 9 bigs on the roster that needed to get developmental time in Summer League. I mean, I liked what I saw from Mark Williams, but it was kind of like what you said. It wasn't really translating to the stat sheet. Like, I think I said this in the chat about like 9 million times. He is huge. Like, Mark Williams is such a large player. Even like, and I know it's just Summer League, so it's not like full NBA competition, but he's listed at like 7'2", right, in shoes. Like, he is a giant, and he is big, and he is strong. And as soon as he got that confidence that you guys are talking about, you could see how much of an impact he can have. And he was quicker than I thought he was, too. Like, he's keeping up with these guards. Obviously, some are going to blow by him, but for the most part, he's, like, staying lateral, and he showed some playmaking chops. Like, the potential is there for him to be, in my opinion, a starter on this team this season eventually. Like, I don't think he'll have much problem displacing Mason Plumlee once he proves to Steve Clifford, which, by the way, is crazy that Steve Clifford's back, as the, you know, starting center in Charlotte, especially if he can continue to progress on offense, because I think that's where most of the shakiness was. Like, defensively, you could see he was crashing the boards well, he was blocking shots, but I think the lack of playmaking, like you mentioned, really affected his ability to be impactful on offense, because he's just a traditional center in the sense that it's going to be pick and roll, it's going to be cutting, it's going to be lobs. And that's perfect for LaMelo, but for a Hornets team with Crutcher and Alexander as the point guards, it's probably not ideal. So I liked what I thought. I think he'll probably start eventually this season. How quickly, though, that's the question there.
I was also pretty encouraged with Mark. I honestly, it was for like the exact reasons that you said. Like, it was weird, though, that it was his passing that ended up being like the thing that kind of like caught people's eye when he was such an elite finisher in college. But like, we literally could probably do the whole podcast and tie everything into like the lack of playmaking and offensive initiating reliability that they had throughout Summer League. But I mean, that was clearly like a huge reason why. It's probably going to take him and LaMelo like maybe 8 minutes of playing together before they connect on some sort of lob, or like LaMelo does like a crazy pass, like dump off pass on a pick and roll for a wide open.
Make that an over under. Post that on that behind the day of opening day. How long until LaMelo and Mark?
But like, I agree with you too. Like, I'm tempted to say that I would lean towards just starting him now and just being like, go for it. Like, we know you can play defense. Like, you might as well just be out there now, like playing with the starters. And so you can get like kind of a grip on your offensive role on this team. And if he is like a decent passer or a better passer than he showed than he was at Duke, the one thing that Mason Plumlee is going to have on him is playmaking. So if he can replicate that in the slightest, then he's going to have every physical and like skill set advantage over Mason Plumlee to get on the court. He's just would be younger and would need to like prove that he can be like a more disciplined player than most NBA rookie bigs are. But I think he's going to do that too, because he was so good defensively and impacts the game like immediately from stepping on the court just by like standing out there and putting his arms up, that I don't think it's going to take him very long.
I mean, he did have good restraint in like the Summer League, because you would expect someone who had the shot blocking or has the shot blocking ability that he does, you kind of envision them being jump happy and block happy and chasing blocks and getting out of position. But he didn't really do that too much. He picked his spots, but he positioned himself well, and he's just, his size, like to Jack's point, is just such a deterrent no matter what his like actual ability ever becomes. Just having someone that big and that mobile really, I think, gives you the potential to have a good defense. And then also, like you said, there's a couple plays he had where he moved his feet well on the perimeter, and because he's so long, that even if they do get a step on him, he'll just erase it from behind. And that, like, having that ability to where it's not like a wasted possession or a lost possession if you get him out in the pick and roll, like, and you get him switched on the guard, like, that's huge for how this team, I mean, I don't know how they'll be under Steve Clifford, but that's a big difference for how this team will guard. And then his length, I think, if they play drop coverage and his ability to contest jump shots, I think really gives him a huge advantage over Mason Plumlee there too.
Yeah, I agree.
Do you guys want to talk about next, JT Thor or Kai Jones? Or do you want to like kind of lump them together? Or do you have any like hot takes on either one of the two?
Should we start with Kai? He was he had the most polarizing summer league.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it.
Of any Hornets player.
I think Kai Jones, his play, I feel like the things he did well, he did really, really well. And the things that he did poorly are really, really bad, which has kind of been his story as a prospect, right?
Yeah, pretty much. If you had to answer this question, did he have a good or bad summer league? Like, is it possible to put it in one word like that or such simple terms? I don't know if it is. Like, I don't think he had either one of those. Like, I think he just had a Kai Jones summer league. Which is fine. It was still encouraging.
The one word would be Kai. Yeah. Describe it. So part of it, if you use it in the lens of like some of the stuff that he struggled with is stuff he's not going to be expected to do, assuming he won't still try to do it, which is part
which
of
is a problem. Question.
Yeah, which is a question. I think it was good. But like I said, because like I don't think he's ever going to take 10 3-pointers in an NBA game.
That was crazy. We got it. Like, stop. Like, why? Like, for what?
That's the point of Summer League, right? You try to expand the skill set. And he clearly took it way too far.
The confidence to just keep firing
away. I respect it.
At like 0-7 is so makes me feel better than if he stopped shooting at like 0-5 and just kind of like faded into the background. He was just like, no, like one of these is going to go in someday. Like I'm just going to keep going until it does.
Especially because coming from a guy who's not like he doesn't have a history as a shooter to fall back on. Like if Steph Curry's 0-8, you're like keep shooting that thing. You know it's going in eventually. And I don't even need to use Steph Curry as an example. Like. Anybody that has a semblance of a jump shot, like you got LaMelo Ball's 0-6. I'm not telling LaMelo Ball to stop shooting. But like Kai Jones, he's made like 1-3 in his NBA career. And I don't think he shot well in the form, is like one of these is going to go. And not only that, it's not like they were going in and out when he was missing.
Oh, they like, were bricks.
No,
some of them were like, it was like someone had the window open in the arena.
He was missing by like an entire foot. And then the next time he caught the ball with any space, he's like, this one's the one. And then he'd miss that one by 2 feet. And it didn't slow
my
him down,
favorite
but...
part was that his jump shot changed every time. Like every time he shot the ball, the jump shot was different. Like the form was completely different from the last shot. It's crazy.
Yeah. he's not quite a shooter yet, which is so that. And that's kind of what I was saying with like the stuff that is not in his NBA skill set. That was the part that was really, really bad. And also when he would like try to dribble sometimes went really, really poorly. But in a Kai Jones role where the only dribbling he's doing is against like a scrambling defense with a straight line to the basket and he's catching and finishing, like he showed a lot of things to be excited about in that part of his game.
Yeah, less than three dribbles. Like he was awesome. In summer league, like when he would,
that's the
when
cutoff.
He would catch the yeah no like, but like when he would catch the ball on the perimeter, take like a jab step or do some sort of rip through and just go right to the rim, like it didn't really matter how big the person in front of him was, like they just couldn't stop him because he can just dunk anything from like 4 feet inside the paint or something like that. As long as he can reach the rim with the tip of his fingers, like he has the confidence to go, just rise up and the athleticism to just get over pretty much anybody that's there. The open court ball handling left some to be desired, but it's just like the things that he does, like just make you feel like there really is like a foundation for like a good player. Like he has the confidence that when his jump shot gets ironed out, like it could be a really effective tool. He's already like pretty decent at putting the ball on the floor, attacking a closeout, getting by somebody, and just getting to the rim and creating a shot like for himself, like when he gets an advantage. It's just the other like aspect, like being a playmaker, like a more patient defender and stuff like that, that did not necessarily seem like they had come along yet after his season with the Swarm. But I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess myself kind of included, but some people probably thought he could be the backup center this year. I don't know if this necessarily bolstered that feeling for me or for anybody, but I mean, it's possible, and he doesn't need to be the backup center this year either. Like what is being the backup center for a team that's like not even going to be a playoff contender like do for you? You want him to be the backup center when the Hornets are actually good, and then if he's not, then it's a problem. But you know, we've still got time for him to iron out these things, and it's going to be fun to watch him do the other stuff that he's already good at.
I think that's part. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, John.
No, it's your turn.
I was just going to say, I think that's part of what makes the Summer League concerning for me, not because he didn't show enough to be a center, because I think he has the potential to be a solid center, but it's kind of like come in like this weird full loop where we talked about the Hornets needing a center, and now they almost have too many mouths to feed at center that like you want them to get NBA reps. Like Mason Plumlee is going to be there, and knowing Steve Clifford, Mason Plumlee is not going to get benched. Like, let's just be real. Mason Plumlee is going to play rotational minutes, and he's not a bad center like in the rotation. I think he's a fine backup. Mark Williams, obviously you would hope he gets NBA time. And from we haven't gotten to him yet, but Nick Richards looks like he could play some okay backup minutes. And then you have Kai Jones. Like, that's four players at the center who, like you said, Chase, can't really play power forward, right? Like, Kai Jones was the only player out of those four who you would have some hope for him to be a power forward. And I think that's what he was trying to do when he shot 10 threes, and it didn't work. And so now you got four centers. JT Thor, on the other hand, which we can get to, I think is a lot easier to play at the four, which is why he's more versatile. But I think that's the biggest concern with me for Kai Jones coming out of summer league is that he can't be a power forward right now, and that's going to hinder his ability to get minutes in Charlotte.
Yeah, the 10 threes was like the I'm gonna prove to you guys that I can play four, and then he failed in spectacular fashion.
And then he was like, the team runs through me. Did you hear that quote? I can't remember where I saw it, but I saw a quote of him saying like, yeah, you know, I'm trying to take the responsibility to lead this team. And I'm like, Kai, it's summer league, man. Come on. Like,
I'm out there playing all the minutes. Like, I'm the best player. Yeah, yeah, and at the time he was like sixth in minutes per game on the summer league team or something like that.
I love the confidence, but
I love it. It's awesome. Like, he definitely has the right mindset to like, get better and succeed.
He just needs to come with the, like, I don't know. He's quite a character. And by the way, his final stat line, he shot 6.3% from three for summer league, which is such a funny number to see. But I mean, it's the same thing. And I think this will be a thing that's always his kind of drawback, is just kind of his, when he plays, he's so sped up, and that improves over time. But it's not one of those things that drastically changes over the course of a player's career. And so I think that's always going to hold him back. I think he has this ability, or he definitely has the talent and the athleticism to be a guy that comes in and on his night is a menace on both ends of the floor and has these nights where he can go off and block a bunch of shots and dunk all over everybody. But over like long periods of play, I feel like that starts to kind of, his impact kind of evaporates a little bit because the inability to like pace himself starts to come out the longer he plays. And that's when he starts doing things like trying to lead fast breaks and be like the offensive initiator and just goes way outside of his skill set. But I feel like he's going to get minutes this year. I mean, I don't know with Richards here too. It's just, I don't know where his minutes come from. I keep forgetting about Richards. It's just, It's a tough place to see, because he definitely won't get minutes at the four. I feel like he's going to need some injuries and then be like a super sub at some point throughout the season to get his time. JT Thor, I feel like, kind of similar to Kai Jones. I feel like both of them played so little that we do the thing. They did at least a little last year for the NBA, in the NBA, that we do the thing where we haven't had a chance to see their flaws, and we kind of get a little bit too, like, we get a little, like, some delusions of grandeur with how good these players are, right?
Definitely. So, I think that, no, sorry. I was taking a second. I am very biased for JT Thor. I think I've probably told you, I said this when we did the draft show, I love just like really good defenders who usually can't shoot, but that's, but he can shoot a little bit now. So it helps. But I think the versatility JT Thor shows is what's going to earn him minutes, and the defense, obviously, with Clifford back in charge. But like you said, you very clearly saw the youth in JT Thor, because I'm pretty sure he was like one of the youngest rookies coming into last season or something like that.
Yeah. He's very close to it.
Yeah. And so you can see those moments where it's like, oh, this dude is a teenager still. Like, he needs more time. He needs to develop, like, the mental lapses of letting a guy get by him or taking a shot at the wrong moment or missing a pass or stuff like that. But then you see the moments where he's, like, locking up on the perimeter. He's getting crazy blocks. He's scoring, what do you have, 28 in the last game of Summer League? Like, I think he has a pretty smooth, like, three-point shot. It's just a matter of hitting them more consistently now. But 37% to start in Summer League at the very least. So I have a lot of faith in JT Thor. And I think I wrote about this in the middle of the season last year. Like, outside of Cody Martin, the Hornets don't really have any, okay, go lock up a player defenders. And if JT Thor can, you know, add a little muscle, iron out those like young moments, those kinks he has every once in a while, I really think he could make an impact in the rotation with everything he brings to the floor. He just has to bring it all together. I'm very high on JT Thor, though. So, like I said, admitted bias here.
Yeah, and I don't mean to say make it come across like his summer league was bad, but I feel like...
Oh, no, you definitely saw the moments, though. You absolutely saw the moments.
Yeah, but I feel like we got to this point, and just like reading at the Hive and reading Hornets Twitter and stuff, where like JT Thor, if you didn't know anything about him, you would have thought he was going to be like the alpha of the summer league team and he was gonna like take summer league by storm and stuff like that, and he just kind of like fit in as like a decent player in the summer league that has traits that will translate to the NBA club, but like, not, you know, he's not out there like getting shut down because he's put in good minutes and we don't need to see anything else anymore. And I mean, maybe if he has that big 28 point outburst earlier on, maybe that changes, but I think on the whole he kind of showed where his limitations are, and that he doesn't, and this is where the environment comes back into play again. Like, he's not a creator by any means. He's a three, and his potential is like a 3-and-D player that can also protect the interior, right? So he's a role player, and the summer league is where role players have to be superstars, and he does not have like the ball handling and creativity to be that kind of player. I think we saw that a lot where he was getting kind of overwhelmed both like ball pressure, and if he tried to put the ball on the floor, he didn't really have good ideas of what to do with it. I think he kind of is limited to a catch and finish player, which doesn't show itself well in the summer league, but at least he showed that he can knock down shots to some capacity. He had a few moments of like putting the ball on the floor and getting to the basket, but I don't think he didn't look like a superstar in the making, like I think kind of people were maybe starting to think about. What are your thoughts, Chase?
Yeah, I mean, he definitely did not show like the ability, like, and not that he didn't build off of his like rookie season appearances, but I don't think he showed anything that he didn't show when he played. He played in the rotation for a little bit, but even when he played limited minutes, that was kind of what we thought he was, like a guy that was really comfortable shooting from three, despite being really big and really athletic. And then he's also like a good, aggressive, like rangy defender. And that was basically what he was for the summer league team. And I thought it was kind of weird as a whole that like, it didn't seem like anybody played big minutes in any one game. Like even like Nick Richards played quite a bit before he started sitting. But I mean, JT only averaged 24 minutes a game in summer league. So I feel like in certain games it's harder to get into a rhythm, also because you have so many other guys that are playing at the same position as you. And he was at the three a lot of the time when he was on the court. And like you, John said, that does not lend itself to being a better shot creator, even if he has improved on that type of thing. So I'm interested to see like whether or not he's in the rotation, like probably not to start off of the year, but I would imagine that he's like the closest player to being in that isn't in now, I would say. So if he can just add like a little bit offensively and continue being a consistent shooter, then I think he definitely has a place in the NBA.
His shot definitely looks like it should be really, really good. It's very hot and cold, but his form looks very good.
He catches the ball and shoots like with no hesitation. Like he doesn't hesitate at all. He looks really comfortable every time he catches it on the perimeter. It's just like getting by people is not like a strong suit right now.
Right. I think, like I said, his defensively, you want him. He can guard everybody. Right. That's the goal. Offensively, he's just kind of a catch and finish guy, right? Either if he's playing at the four, that he can have him spot up and shoot threes. If he is playing as a big, he can roll or in the dunker spot. But I think you want JT Thor dribbling as little as possible if you want to get the best version of JT Thor. Yeah. And I think he kind of reinforced that with the summer league play. Who else we got? Any other like
LJ Figueroa?
Oh yeah,
I know that was Jack's guy too.
That's my guy. I love me some LJ.
I wish he just like didn't miss a shot the entire summer league. That would have been fun.
That is so great.
He's 13 for 13 for the first
25.
yeah.
He's 13 for 13 through two games, right?
Yeah.
And then he missed. Yeah. It was like a dumb shot, not like on his part. It was like a rush shot at the end of a quarter, at the end of the shot clock. I think that he finally missed, wasn't it?
I think so. Yeah, because I don't think it was like his first shot in that next game that he missed.
No, I think he made his first one.
He probably got to like 15 for 15 or something.
Yeah,
like that.
And he had to like throw up a prayer and he missed it. And then that's when the floodgates opened and he like missed more than one shot. And I think he even got like really cold one game, didn't he? I mean, I don't have all like the box
scores. I think he was 1 for 5 one game. I know he finished summer league. I have to say he finished summer league 18 for 26, which is still like a really good percentage. But when you start 13 for 13, that's not really a great way to end stuff. But I think maybe this is a hot take. I think the best part about LJ Figueroa for me was the fact that even when he wasn't making shots, he still looked like he belonged on the court. Like he still had an impact. He was still probably the best perimeter defender on the team, and that's crazy, or at least the one who showed the most energy. Like there's like this Alex Caruso quote where it's like all these players are out there trying to be LeBron when you just have to be like Alex Caruso or like a role player or something. And LJ Figueroa embodied that from my perspective, at least. Like he looked like he knows he's not gonna be LeBron or Kobe or a star in the NBA. Like he's just trying to get onto a roster and get a chance, and by hustling and doing all the little things on defense and, you know, handling the ball pretty well. And like, even his shot doesn't look good. Like his shot is not like, like a smooth jump shot or anything, but it goes in. Like he just does all the little things, I think, well on both sides of the floor. And I'm like, I think he deserves at the very least a two-way spot. I've gone all in and said, just sign him to the main roster. That might be a bit much, but I really like LJ Figueroa on defense, offense, even past the shot making. So that's what impressed me about him.
I think I might be with you on signing him to the full roster. Like if no like trade presents itself that adds to those two open spots, or like some veteran pops up or anything like that. I mean, he really was like the best perimeter defender on the Hornets Summer League team, I think. I think he averaged one steal per game at the end of it. But I mean, he was just so active and clearly was like the most like NBA, like professional defensive system experienced player, I guess would be how to put that in a very poor way. But I mean, he clearly
very eloquently stated, yes.
Yeah, right. I'm very good with words, clearly. But he was, I think, the best perimeter defender on that team. And he, like Jack said, he clearly had the most like energy or highlights or whatever, even if he wasn't as consistent or whatever as somebody else might have been. But he shot 70% from the field. So you really can't go wrong with like that. I mean, it's not like he's going to shoot 70% of the field in the NBA, but. I mean,
if you would, we should definitely sign him to the NBA.
Yeah, no, definitely should sign him if he's going to shoot 70% from the field and average 9 points per like 24 minutes or whatever while doing so. But I mean, even if he has a bit of a drop in his performance and his shooting percentages with the NBA team. Like, he clearly like knows his role and will be able to just be the 15th man on the team. I mean, it's not like I know that much about him, but he seemed like a good like bench presence, and that's also an important thing for a guy that's not going to be playing every night. So I
know it's another Massachusetts connection for us, Chase. I know it's another
Lawrence, Massachusetts. He went to I'm gonna Google it right now, but I think he went to either four or five high schools, and then a junior college, St. John's, and Oregon.
Jeez,
and then played in San. Yeah, he went to two different colleges in Mass, and two different high schools in the Lawrence, Mass area. Two in Florida. Went to Odessa Junior College, St. John's for two seasons, Oregon for one season. Played in Santa Cruz with the Warriors last year. Played in the Dominican Republic after that. And now has played for the Hornets Summer League team. So he has had a long journey to get here, and it would be pretty cool if he ended up getting rewarded with a roster spot. Or even a two-way.
Do we want to commit to a guy that hasn't shown the ability to commit to another team?
I guess you're not wrong. They're probably asking themselves that question in the Hornets front office. So
right,
he played for the Mavs last year too, Summer League. So he's played. Yeah.
So add another stop on the.
This guy's never played for one team for more than 6 months. So are we sure he's going to stick around if we sign him to a contract? I think, but all the stuff you guys said defensively, I felt like offensively, just it was the same. You can say kind of the same thing, right? Like aside from the shooting, just things, the team just kind of worked better when he was on the floor, right? As opposed, it kind of the opposite of what we talked about with some, and it also kind of points that Alex Caruso quote. Of everybody kind of trying to prove themselves and trying to do their thing and show and like showcase their talent. And then Figueroa is just like, I'm out here. We're just like winning basketball games and doing the little things like connecting the offense and making like not necessarily like getting a bunch of assists, but just making the right play and being in the right spot and making shots when they present themselves, like literally all of the shots when they present themselves.
For sure. And he's a big dude too. He's like 6'6", and he's very clearly like a big body. Like he looked a lot bigger than 6'6" out there.
Yeah, he's girthy.
That's the word.
I guess to wrap up, any of the other, because I guess he was probably the star of the like non-roster players. I guess we haven't talked about Nick Richards much. You guys have any thoughts on Nick Richards? He looked like an NBA player, but he should have. But
he's 24. Yeah, you're.
But yeah, yeah, he's 3 years.
He definitely looked like a 24-year-old in summer league.
So yeah, I mean, I didn't see anything that was like good or bad. It was just like, yep, that's Nick Richards, the guy with the most NBA experience, looking like the guy with the most NBA experience. So I don't know what else there is to say on that. Anyway, also the oldest guy on the team. No, yes, by a couple days, older than Cam McGriff.
I was going to say McGriff might have had him beat, but that is interesting that McGriff is still the oldest.
2 months.
Yeah.
McGriff is older. Yeah. McGriff's 2 months older than
There we go.
Sorry.
But I did think it was weird that they got Isaiah Whaley and Cam McGriff and neither of them played a second. But not that it like matters, but I don't know. I just thought that was strange.
The McGriff one more so to me because he was
on. He played in the NBA last year. Yeah.
Yeah. So. It was strange that they, I thought he would have been like in the rotation, but nope. But any of the other guys, like I know we touched on Tyshawn Alexander a little bit, but like Alexander or Manek or LiAngelo or.
I like Manek. I thought Manek was good enough to earn a spot on the Swarm, like good enough where you don't want to necessarily lose track of him in the G League and like lose his rights, but not good enough to be like a two-way or in a roster spot. Like the shot alone and the confidence he has in the shot, I think you need to keep him on the Swarm because if he can be like a 40% three-point, like he has the build of a stretch four that can shoot 40% in the NBA, not saying he'll ever get there, but like just the potential of having that around in the organization, I think you need to keep him on the Swarm. But outside of that, like LiAngelo was like meh, like Minaya was okay, but like again, and Alexander and Crutcher meh, but like Manek, I think, is the one guy outside of who we talked about you need to keep in the organization.
Chase?
Yeah, I mean, I liked Manek. I agree with, you know, keeping him in the organization, bringing him to Greensboro. I'd say the same with Justin Minaya too, honestly. His minutes were much more limited, but I thought he was pretty interesting as well. He's also like a pretty decent shooter, but much more of like an athlete defender than Manic is. So that, I think that'd be an interesting like forward depth to have there, like two spacers that kind of go about doing that a little bit differently than one another, and just seeing if either of them can pan out. But the non rostered or two-way players were not particularly impressive. I thought, I mean, LiAngelo was like fine, but he does think certain things well for like a G League player, and then the other things he doesn't do very well. So keep him around for, you know, the reasons that are readily apparent. I mean he's definitely a G League level player. Like, he's not, you know, it's not like they're doing him a favor or anything. He'd be able to play for any other G League team, but I don't think we're ever going to hear the end of like the clamoring for a roster spot for him. But I definitely think it's dying down a little bit.
Yeah, I think at least he has something, a skill. Like, he's a very good shooter, and at least like, if the Hornets ever went with giving him like a two-way deal or sign him as like the 15th guy on the roster, you could be like, you know, you always need shooting. And but that's like literally all he can do. Yeah. So, and I mean, like, the Heat have found ways to make players like that useful, but and then, you know, the LaMelo connection. But so I would like to see him. I was rooting for him just because I want to see the success, and I want to have him around just for the, like, the human interest aspect of things. But he's got to like do something to prove that.
Yeah, that's like the kindest way to put it. Like, seriously, he just has to do more. Like, realistically,
yep. Yeah. The only other thing I wanted to say, I didn't really have any thoughts to add on the non roster players, because like, you guys kind of hit it. Nobody really did anything to stand out. It was just kind of like, all right, cool. Like, yep, these are probably all going to be swarm guys, and nobody really elevated themselves to, you know, beyond that point, besides maybe Figueroa getting that second two-way contract that's still out there. But other than that, no, I didn't really see much. One thing I did see was longtime Swarm Hornet, like, purgatory player Xavier Sneed.
Crushing it with the Utah Jazz now.
Yeah.
Crushing it. He's actually, like, he's probably the best player on the Swarm that like never played in a Hornets uniform over the last couple of years. I mean, he definitely is, now that I think about it.
Yeah. No, he was like the on the fringe constantly, and then finally then the Jazz.
Right. Yeah, like that during the COVID stuff, like they just got to him first. Or I think Memphis signed him a 10-day or something, and then he went to Utah. But
But he was doing well when I was watching that Jazz Summer League game, and they were talking him up pretty well. And I was like, I remember that guy. Good for him.
Like you said, always need shooting. And he's shooting.
Yeah, he is a good shooter.
Yep.
So, any other final Summer League? Did anything about the Summer League change? Anything you guys think about the Hornets' needs or plans for the actual season that starts in 3 months?
I tried to force myself not to let that happen, and I think it worked. I don't think so.
Yeah.
Nah, not really. Just, I like LJ Figueroa. We haven't talked since Steve Clifford got hired, though. We haven't.
Oh, you're right. I guess we should wrap up with that.
It was the day before. I just checked, like, while we were doing it. I was like, did we cover it? We published the draft preview the day before the Hornets hired Steve Clifford. We don't have to go in depth, but.
No, let's do a little bit of depth. Well, yeah, not for too much, but I need to put a commercial break in somewhere, and we'll do it right here. All right, so before we go, talk about Steve Clifford and how excited we are. Steve Clifford is back as the Hornets head coach. I'll let you guys start before I share my thought. Chase, Jack, you brought it up. You go first. What was your like initial reaction, and has it changed at all? And like, what are you thinking? How are you feeling?
I think I laughed when I saw it. I definitely laughed when I saw it, because how could you not? Like, I don't like. Okay, from the bare bones perspective, like, just without any context, I don't hate it, because you talk about a team that needs defense. Obviously, he's going to bring that. You talk about a team that ideally is going to want to push for the playoffs soon. He can help you with that too, because that's what he does. He tries to win. That's his thing. But it's just so funny that he gets fired for Borrego, then Borrego gets fired for him. And I think I said this during the draft preview, like, you have a team with the direction now in limbo because of, you know, circumstances out of their control. And ideally you want to see what your young players have, and you bring in the one coach who, you know, like, is so resistant to play young players. Like, the only thing you could do outside of this to, like, hinder development is hire Tom Thibodeau from the Knicks, right? So I'm just hoping that Steve Clifford is more open to playing young players, because if not, then are we going to see another season where Book Knight just doesn't play? Are we going to see another season? Like, is Kai Jones not going to get any minutes? Is Mark Williams going to struggle to overtake Plumlee? Like, JT, like, these are all the questions that are going through my head, because, you know, Steve Clifford is going to play the guys that are going to help him win, but will he play the young players? Like, I this is so random. And I remember listening to an interview with, like, it was like on a JJ Redick podcast with RJ Hampton, was when Clifford was coaching the Magic, and Hampton was like, yeah, it took me so long to break into that rotation. I'm like, ah, no, like, this is, it's just, it was funny when it happened. I just really hope it's not going to hurt the development of youth, even though I know it obviously will. Let's be real.
Chase.
So I would just like to welcome the pride of Mattawamkeag, Maine.
I know it's a big Maine guy representing.
It's a huge day for me. The where we got another one of our own back at the helm of a NBA franchise. I believe it has the most head coaches of any state in the America currently coaching a NBA team. So fellow alum of the University of Maine system. He coached a high school team here too. I mean, it's very cool to see him, like, get back in charge of, especially of a team that I like so much. So, I mean, I'm obviously, like, perfectly fine with it. I even when they fired him, like, I thought he was still, like, a good coach. It was just like they fired him because the where he was at in his career and where the Hornets were at as an organization were a lot different and did not align. But I think now that they do, like, this is, I mean, depending on how you feel about the first 2 years he coached in Orlando, like, this is the most talented team. I mean, honestly, this, even with those teams, this probably is the most talented team and easily has the, like, best like, player in LaMelo of any team that he's ever coached, I think. So it's definitely going to be a lot different, I think, than the first time. And a lot of what him and Mitch have said kind of indicates that as well. Like, when they interviewed him during Summer League, like, when he came on during one of the games, he talked about, like, he's like, I want to play with the same sort of pace. Like, I know we have a lot of talented young players. Like, I want to keep, like, this sort of, like, youth development thing going and, like, adapt my style to theirs instead of making them adapt to me. And he said the same thing on the Woj pod. If any listeners haven't seen that or haven't listened to that, he had an episode with Adrian Wojnarowski. It came out a couple days ago, and it was pretty good. It's like 45 minutes of him. He talks about LaMelo, like, coming back to the team to coach again, Michael Jordan, like, a whole bunch of other stuff. And it really does seem like it's going to be a different experience than the first time. I mean, we obviously have to wait and see, because words can only go so far, especially when they're in, you know, July and June. But I think it's going to be a lot different. I think the time that he spent away from basketball, like, a little bit definitely helped. Not necessarily away from basketball, but, like, away from being a head coach and, like, the daily grind of basketball definitely helped, like, reinvigorate him, it seems.
I think one thing I will say on the youth aspect, I feel like maybe – I think he is from that Thibodeau line of thinking where he does want proven players. But I do think his reluctance to play to the youth has become a little bit, like – amplified.
It was definitely a little overstayed. Maybe. I think it was just Malik Monk was really
and Noah Vonleh.
Yeah, but, like,
which, fair
no
enough,
offense, but no offense to Noah Vonleh, but, like, what team does he play for right now?
Like, you know, like, yeah, so because, like, the thing is, well, the thing that was, like, the frustrating part was that the way the youth he played was not the youth that people wanted him to play, right? Like, we wanted to see, like, exciting Malik Monk, exciting Noah Vonleh. And it said the young guys we got were, like, Dwayne Bacon and PJ Harrison and Cody Zeller that he wanted to play. So that, which to be fair, so Mark Williams fits that like Cody Zeller type of thing of like, oh, he's a good defender, and you know he'll do the little things well, presumably, and maybe it's a little different with guys like James Bouknight that are more flashy and maybe need a little bit more refinement. But for me, what I've kind of gathered just kind of watching his press conference and watching, like, hearing him talk, like when they interviewed him at the Summer League games and stuff. I haven't listened to the Woj Pod yet, but I plan on it sometime soon. He seems much more relaxed than in his first go around here, which I hope is a good thing, right? Like, maybe a little bit more flexible with things, doesn't quite feel the same pressure that a head coach normally would, because he's in a familiar situation. He knows all the people here. He knows the organization, and it's just kind of like, and also kind of like accepting that you're like the backup plan. I feel like there's a, a different kind of approach.
Like, I think that shows how like comfortable he is, though, to be completely fine with that. And to be like, yeah, like I'm just glad to like get this sort of opportunity again. Like, this is a good team, a good situation. Like, I'm glad to come here, even if, you know, you didn't even think to call me until the first guy like backed out, you know, like it sounds like someone like something you'd never want to do, but he obviously really wants to. So I think that can't be a bad thing. You know,
Mitch Kupchak even also said that like in front of his face in the press conference,
literally
he said something to like the guy we originally hired, you know, went a different direction. So now we're here. It's like, didn't even like try to dodge that fact.
Very poor guy. Out, very simple and plain for everybody.
But one other thing I want to turn around on real quick on that point. I know there's a lot of criticism, and I also was very like disappointed at the initial announcement. And there's a lot of like criticism to the Hornets for like scrambling and panicking. And it's like, I mean, they were definitely scrambling, but I don't know like what else, like how could they not be?
Yeah.
Right? Like they took their time naming a coach because there was very little competition in the way of teams looking for head coaches. And then the guy that they hired changed his mind as late as he possibly could have. Like, what are they supposed to do? Like, just go in and start from scratch and they interview everybody, go through like another rounds of interviews with everybody and take another 2 months? Like, they had to do something quick. So, I'm feeling better about it now than I was when the news was first announced. Like I said, the big thing to me just being his demeanor and the things he said have been good. Like, he says that he wants to do things the way they've been doing them and just tighten up the defense. And I think with that, along with the way that he's kind of presented himself in this more relaxed, kind of laid back with these like mannerisms compared to where he was a little bit more stoic originally, I'm hopeful that we'll see a little bit of a looser Hornets team, with hopefully still the defensive discipline that he's instilled in this first two stops as a head coach. Not to say that, again, I'm super excited about it, but we'll make the best of it, right?
Oh, exactly. Definitely.
So, yeah. Thanks for bringing that up, Jack. I totally forgot that happened like right after we did our draft preview.
I did too.
That was announced on like, what, the Friday?
After it's literally one day after we put the draft preview out. It was the 24th, and we put the preview out the 23rd. So
yeah, it's literally the 23rd.
Day. Yeah.
Yeah, so it was just like, what a wild, just whirlwind of 2 days as a Hornets fan.
Yep.
Because I guess we didn't really summarize the draft that much either. But like, between the trade that no one had any idea who was going where with Durin, and then picking Mark Williams, and then trying to like, and then the dust settles, and then like rising out of the dust is Steve Clifford's your new head coach. It's just like, what is going on? But I don't know. We're here now. I think the mood has started to come back a little bit. I think people got a little down in the dumps for a little while, but I think we're all right. And now we just kind of have to wait for the off the court issues to shake out, and then we'll see what happens in August, September, when camp opens. I think camp is what, September? Is when training camps open?
I want to say September 18th. I'm a sick person for even having a number for that in my head. But
I mean, it starts. They did announce the first like preseason game. They're playing the Celtics
in Greensboro. I think that's pretty cool. They should do stuff like that more often. And I was so funny because why I thought that was cool was like I was like, oh, the NBA team traveling like an hour playing in like a smaller city, smaller arena. And then I looked it up and the Greensboro Coliseum is bigger than Spectrum Center. So that makes sense as to why they're having the game at the Greensboro Coliseum. But, you know, I mean, it's still pretty cool to play in like in North Carolina, but not in Charlotte. So you'll get like a different fan base, I guess.
I think they used to do that more. I remember them. They played games in like Asheville a couple years ago. And
the 60s teams used to play all like they would go on like barnstorming tours for preseason. Like they'd play like five different cities, like, and none of them had any. So it would be they all be like really small cities. Like the Boston Celtics used to drive like to like 4 hours away up in like northern Vermont and Maine and just play. And I remember the Knicks used to do the same thing and play in like Connecticut and stuff. It's really weird.
I feel like it's good for branding, I would think. Not that like obviously now people have easy access to it, but I think it does establish a better kind of bond to the team if you go see them in person, even if it's just the preseason. If you go to a live event and you enjoy the experience and you enjoy the team, you tend to like tie yourself to that team a little bit more. So I think it would be good for business to go like play a game in Greensboro, especially or if you even go further out and go to like Charleston or Myrtle Beach or Raleigh and try to be like, hey guys, you have a team across the state you guys should watch because they're pretty cool.
Yeah, be like, we're not asking you to drive out here, but flip the TV on.
A
little ratings boost, that's all we want.
Yeah, like personal anecdote on a related note, like I took one of my friends to a Charlotte FC match a couple weeks ago. Or like a week, like the Nashville game the weekend before last, and I don't think he really paid any attention to it at all, like the whole season. And then we went to play like video games, like the next weekend, and we were like, "When are we gonna play?" And he's like, "Hold on, I'm watching the end of the Charlotte FC match." And that's there we go, new fan.
Yeah, see that type of stuff really does happen like all the time though. Like I feel like people like that have been into something for so long, like kind of can underestimate that type of thing.
Right. So, more games outside of Charlotte. Because, I mean, you could put them in Charlotte. I'm not going to go anyway, so I'm telling you.
Yeah, right. Like, why would we go to a preseason game when we can go to a regular season game?
Right, but yeah. I've never watched it before.
We'll pay $8 for a ticket rather than $35.
Right. Like, I'll go to plenty of regular season games. I have no need to go to the preseason game. Yeah. So, go give that to people that don't normally get it.
Yeah.
With that, anything else you guys want to touch on before we wrap it up?
Oh,
I don't think so. I mean, Cody Martin got extended. That's
it. Good fair deal.
Cool.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like it. Agree. Bring back the one defender you have.
Yeah, pretty literally.
Good. Reasonable price too. $8 million a year is like about as cheap as you can sign a player for if you're not like a title team that's hoarding veterans.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Brother got more money though.
Williams got like a little under seven like a couple days ago. So, I mean, they're very comparable in terms of their skill level for the Thunder. Or is it Kenrich?
Oh, Kenrich. Yeah, Kenrich.
Oh, Kenrich. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay. I know. Okay, that makes sense. That it's, there's no K in there. That's Kenrich. But, yeah, I mean, he makes, like, slightly less than Cody Martin, and he's probably slightly less impactful on the court than Cody Martin. So, I think it's a very, very fair deal.
Right. I think that's a really good kind of, like, benchmark deal, too, because I think if you were to ask – because – Cody Martin is the level of player that his fans of his team will tend to kind of like get tired of after a while, right? Because he's not flashy, he's just kind of like a glue guy. And so
role players aren't very exciting when your team is like 500 as opposed to like playing deep in the playoffs or something.
Right. So then it's like, well, all right, do you guys think that was a bad deal, like would you rather have Kenrich Williams? And it's like, no, I'd much rather have Cody Martin. It's like, okay, then I think we're fair then. We'll find the deal to be more palatable that way. I also feel like last thing, NBA fans, we're getting better at it, but I feel like NBA fans are still like had a very long delay in adjusting to the cap spike from like 10 years ago in terms of like their value of players.
Yes.
Yeah.
It definitely has. Yeah.
That, like, I feel like it's only the last couple of years that people finally kind of like really readjusted their expectations. Cause I remember early on the cap jumped from, it was like, went from like what, somewhere in like 72 or 73 up to like 100. Right.
Yeah.
And then, so like players were signing for like, they're like, oh, this guy's probably worth like what, $3 to $5 million a year. And then they would get like 10 and people were like, oh my God, such an overpay. And now we're like starting to finally adjust that. It's like, okay, like, the mid-level exception is like $11 million a year now. Like, it used to be like $5 million.
Yeah, so, I saw people reacting to like Damian Lillard's extension being like, oh my God, $60 million a year. And it's like, he is making that much because the NBA is making more money. Like, that they're not just giving all of their money to the players now. Like, the basketball-related income, a percentage of that goes to the players. And their salaries rise in accordance with the basketball-related income rising, which has been rising year after year after year for, like, decades now, basically.
Right.
And it's probably going to continue doing so. So the only reason players are getting paid more is because owners and teams and front office members and coaches are also getting paid more. Like, their players are just the most front-facing ones. So
players are the only ones where we can, like, Google spot track and their salary.
Right. You can Google their salary.
Yeah.
Which is just a wild thing, just like in just life as in general, is like, how much money did that guy make? And I just type in their name and see exactly what their salary is for the year.
Yeah. I was thinking about this while I was watching the NASCAR race the other day, and this is Hornets related because Michael Jordan has a team in NASCAR. But driver salaries are completely private in that. You never, ever know how much a driver makes a year in that, which is like, imagine if the NBA was just completely secretive with their salaries. It's like, how much does LeBron James make? I have no idea. If we had no idea, we'd be like, is LeBron James make $10 billion every year? Like, we probably would like think stuff like that.
Especially like, if we had no other sports, if it was all professional sports, right? If we had no idea how much any professional athlete made, like, how much do you think people would expect professional athletes to make? It'd probably be way less than they actually make, right?
Yeah, they'd be like, LeBron James makes $25 an hour.
Right. Like, LeBron James, he's the best player in the world. LeBron James makes, like, more than $1 million a year, right? It's like, by a little bit.
Yeah, couple hair over that.
Yeah. Anyway, appreciate you guys all tuning in. We will come back with a new episode whenever more stuff happens for us to talk about.